somebody will ask you what these systems have to in common. Let's say the helical arrangement of leaves, the making feather hairs, pattern on tropical seashells, the orientation of a growth cone, or the timing of the division plane of an E. coli bacterium. You will presumably get the answer, I believe they have nothing in common. And I hope at the end of my talk you will be convinced that they have something very important in common. And the common feature in this is the dependent systems, where you get a local generation of a signal, and this signal is then quenched. And this quenching has the following effect: either it is shifted into the neighboring cell, or it disappears and will reappear somewhere else. And these are then systems which have very interesting properties. They never reach a stable steady state. They always are dynamic. They are going on, and you will see that this has very interesting consequences. So the whole story starts with dining in an Italian restaurant, and I ordered spaghetti frutta di mare, and this shell was in this meal, and this has a really substantial influence on my further life. what you see there is that these shells can such a shell is growing on over the time. So you have a new material is only added at the margin. That means if you have there an oblique line, this tells you that this pigmentation reaction was a traveling wave. And this traveling wave behaves like a well-educated traveling wave behaves. If two waves run into each other, they kill each other, or if you get a spontaneous firing, nobody is in a refractive phase, they can infect both. So I found it amusing and took this and forgot it. And a little bit later I came across such a huge variety of patterns on seashells. And so if you take in mind that all this type of patterns on the seashells are time record, then you have a wonderful system where you can analyze dynamic systems. My feeling is this is mainly made by good Lord, that you have a wonderful textbook, educational textbook to understand dynamic systems. For instance, there you see if this area is in a particular state, you get synchronous oscillations. If they are in the other state, you get traveling waves. For instance, if there is a perturbation, you see this was at a particular time, so nature makes experiments by perturbation. I told you in my last talk on Monday that you can generate stable patterns if you have a local activation coupled to an inhibitory reaction of longer range. For instance, this can generate a periodic pattern which are stable in time, and if you make things like stable in time, and these are the signals to induce pigments, you get then, of course, stable stripes. And just if the ratio of, in this case, you assume that the inhibitor decays more rapid, if the inhibitor decays more slowly, you convert the whole system in an oscillating system, and you get then the stripes oriented perpendicular to this, and if you make a time record, you get this type of stripes. And there is a third elementary mode, and these are traveling waves. If such an excitable region can infect the neighboring region, you get then traveling waves which run over. And for instance, there was an experiment by nature, something happens with this mollusk, you get interruption of some of the waves, and then you get spontaneous triggering, and if two waves run into each other, they kill each other, and this you can simulate in a very straightforward manner. So these are the elements. Another mechanism I need, in addition to the activator-inhibitor mechanism, is be aware that we don't need a real inhibitor. It can also be that you need something from the surrounding to get the outer catalysis, so you remove the substrate or you move something, and this you need for building up a local peak. We see it there, so we don't have an inhibitor, but we have a substrate which is depleted, and we get a local maxima. For instance, in the sand dune example I gave last time, this is exactly the moment. So let us go to some of these shells. For instance, this shell, I think it's happens there, we start there some sort of spreading of an activation, in, slow spreading in the surrounding. And whenever the activation is for a sufficient amount of time in the on time, you get a very rapid extinguishing reaction, which say no longer anymore. And that's exactly what you need, for instance, in your blood coagulation system. If you have a bundle, you need a self-enhancing reaction which spreads, coagulate, but then you would get the problem that your coagulation spreads throughout your body, and so you need another wave which comes with a little delay but runs faster and say, no, now it's enough, and then it's quenches. In some shell, so this you can, if you make this assumption, you can very nicely copy this pattern. And in some other species, there's obviously the enough reaction is stronger, and therefore you get a more frequent this type of removal. For instance, another example where the system behaves not as nice traveling waves behave, because for instance there you see it gets branches. And that's some anybody who is involved in traveling waves, this is a real surprise, because let's say if you have forest fire and this moves over the field, you will never get a backfiring of wave. And the question was then how to get such an unusual behavior. And the key for this, this was work with Martin Klingler together, is for instance, let's look at this. There you see that you get branches at a particular time. And for instance, if you we don't know for what the pattern is good for, but the best explanation I found from somebody else is this is a method of waste disposal. So like we have produced in our metabolism some waste, and we have to get rid of them, and there the mollusk just deposits this in the shell, and this deposition is not very absolutely all the time through, but sometimes, and then the cell stops deposition. And for instance, if there are a lot of waves kill each other, you need, of course, a mechanism to start something new. And if you say there is a hormone which is produced with every wave together, then you get a hormone concentration which is proportional to the number of waves. And so if a lot of waves kill each other, the hormone concentration drops low, and this we can change the time constant of our antagonistic reaction, and then we will, the system will enter, the cells come to a steady state so long until you fire a backwards wave, and you get then many details of the real pattern, let's say the same firing or something, you get parallel strut, or let's say if you have a large length area, you get increased branching and so on.
I'm sorry. You said these marks are pigments, right?
Yeah.
So it looks to me they're actually being transported in time. If it's growing in this direction.
It's only the simulations are in a linear array of cells, and everything is added in the course of time. So these are all space-time plots. And this is also that's the interesting thing in the shells. These are also space-time plots. So therefore, you have a natural system which makes space-time plots so that you can find this. Only one example of this of the general type of dynamics which is behind. For instance, there you have parallel lines, and you have blank tanks in between. And if you see how it works, let me give an analogy. You have a heart, and because your heart is beating, you are living. But only because you are living, your heart is beating. So you have the mutual dependence of a system which is in a steady state and a system which is oscillating. And the oscillating system helps the steady state system, and vice versa. And you see, this is after a while of oscillations, the system is poisoning the steady state system is in gray. Then the gray is no longer, it takes too long to trigger the next one. So you get a degeneration, and you have to repopulate everything from this side. The next cell is by no means looks not so very interesting, but this was for me a key. And the reason is you see there a checkerboard. And this checkerboard means, if you keep in mind that this is a space-time plot, is an indication that you have oscillations out of phase. And this, this it's very unusual because you have a huge literature how to that nonlinear oscillations always have a huge tendency to synchronize with each other. But in this way, obviously, the system has the opposite effect. You get oscillations out of phase. And there's obviously some sort of tendency to go from this out of phase oscillation into a traveling wave solution. And the question is how it has been done. It's not even restricted to shells. For instance, if you go into the botanical garden from Tübingen, you see a checkerboard, it's really called the checkerboard plant. And you see the same. So you see we have a pattern there in space, and we have a pattern in time. And we, to get a pattern in space, I told you we need an antagonistic reaction of long range. To get a pattern in time, we need an antagonist of long time constant. So that means all what I will talk in the next future is that we have a superposition of two antagonistic reactions. One which has a long time constant, say, I am black, I don't need any black in the near. And the other is another antagonist which works in parallel. You was now long enough a black, you have to switch into one. And if you put this both together, you see that the homogeneous oscillation is instable, and the next stable state is an outer phase oscillation. And you see there already, if for instance we change a little bit the parameters, I will tell you in a moment what it is, we get a transition from this checkerboard pattern into traveling waves. And you see immediately why traveling waves are also a solution from this. Because let's say in this case you have black, white, and in this case you have also black, white. But in the traveling waves you have also black, white in one direction and black, white in the other direction. And the difference is mainly in this case the system is instable enough, it will collapse and will come back in the neighborhood. And if it is a little bit more stable, then it escapes to the neighborhood and comes there. There you see the subset equations. That is just the depletion mechanism. You say that this is a waste product, which is put removed by this outer catalytic reaction, and we have an additional inhibitory reaction which can block this. Then you see we get this outer phase oscillation. We get a peaks. The peaks poison itself and disappear, and the next peaks come in the not imposed poisoned area. And if we increase a little bit the basic stuff, then you see it takes a while until a little bit negotiation, and then we get out of completely random initial condition. We get then our traveling waves. And that's something very unusual for traveling waves. In normal traveling waves, you need a pacemaker region, something which tells you where to start. And this is interesting. You don't need there anymore a pacemaker region. This makes the stuff spontaneously. And it's only relatively recent that I once read Turing's old paper once again. And what is very interesting, he also mentioned that the possibility was to have three components, but with three or more morphogens, it is possible to have traveling waves with a ring. There would be two sets of waves: one traveling clockwise, and the other would be anticlockwise. There is a natural chemical wavelength in the wave frequency in this case, as well as a wavelength. No attempt was made to develop a formula for this. Turing was in another part of his paper, he said, I don't know for any application, so don't go into it. But just to throw a little bit, it will just start again, this type of from the stretch, wait a minute, there you see the touring traveling wave go around in the ring. So we start again. All cells negotiate what we should do. You get then peaks, and the peaks are poisoning itself, and then the whole thing start to go around. So I didn't check, I think that's a more mathematical question, whether our equations are really mathematically equivalent, but I think in some way we rediscovered this. Only one short note. For this type of traveling waves. This traveling waves has really unusual properties. Physicists are aware of, let's say, the solitons which can cross each other as traveling waves. And this waves have the interesting properties to wear freely, this type of soliton properties. They can go through each other. Maybe I should bring an analogy that you maybe understand better what this principal difference between this type of traveling wave and the normal traveling wave is. Normal traveling wave, you can, let's say, imagine a forest fire. One activated area infects the next one, infects the next one, so you get a fire front. This is somewhat different. Imagine you have a tribe of nomads. They are living somewhere in the savanna, and they are very happy, and it's clear that they have a zone of inhibition there around. So therefore, they would remain as a packed patch. It would not go out by itself like a fire. But let's say if the animals have eaten up all the grass, so it makes a local quenching of the living condition, they have to move. But they will not move as a ring, but they will move as a spot into the neighborhood. And therefore, this type of waves have completely different properties compared to the normal traveling waves. There you see, for instance, such a wave. We have our self-activating substance, we have a long-range inhibitory substance, and we have the substrate which is eaten up. So therefore, if we have an activation, the substrate will lower, we get a movement of the peak, and we get a collision, but with the collision we get also a rapid drop of the long-range inhibitory substance, and our activation will survive there and go to the other side. So you will see it will start again. Look at this, they run into each other, activation and inhibition lowers, and they survive. And there are interesting features saying, for instance, if you go one slide back, there was obviously some sort of global perturbation. In many cases you get an interruption, but in other cases you get a bifurcation. That seems to be strange, but it is exactly what you expect from this type of simulation. You lower the activation, you lower then also the inhibition, and you get this type of branch, and sometimes not all branches are surviving. Or for instance, instead of a crossing, you get something like an amputated X, and you say there are other cases where you get the amputated X, or where they try to make this type of branch. You see there, you can really see there's a long-range inhibition which is in the system, although it makes waves. So it's pretty unusual. But there are many things which are not yet understood. So anybody who would be interested, there's a lot of playground still. For instance, in such a way, we get a wave, they run into each other, they are very happy together, they stay then together and start them speeding up. And that's very strange, for instance, because let's say that you have almost a constant diameter, but you have to keep in mind, this is a space dimension, this is a time dimension, so you get a change from a pattern in space to a pattern in time, but the width of this is almost constant. So this is, for instance, one pattern. I don't have yet a set of equation for this. I wrote a whole book about this. There's also the programs are there, and I will put it tomorrow out in the on the display, but please don't take it with me. I have only one copy with me. So far for the shells. And the shells was really dangerous. This I did for a while more as a hobby, and then I took it away, and then it turns out that I was stumbling repetitively over a much related pattern. And the first was this one. This was, you know, an E. coli bacterium can really precisely find the plane where it has to divide. And this is by no means a trivial problem because, let's say, the plane of division is millions of molecules away from the poles, and the question is how this finds its poles. And Piet de Boer once gave a talk in our institute, and he showed that there is an oscillation. So they have a particular gene that's called MIND, and they could stain this, make a GFP product construct. And you see, this is a phase contrast figure. This is active in one area, then it switches to the other subpole and switches back. So you have something, you have an oscillation, and this was clear that it's an inhibitory molecule for the initiation of the cleft. That means what happens there is you have an oscillation, not on my side, not on my side, not on my side. So it jumps back and forth. So what should the poor bacterium do? Making the division exactly in the center. And because it's jumping back and forth, it's absolutely clear that it must be symmetric. What people also know, if you can block cell division, then your cell is much longer, and then you get multiple sides, but you get exactly an out-of-phase oscillation shortly later. So that's the same bacterium at consecutive time. At the time he was looking into this problem, it was all components was clear. It was even clear whether what the N-terminal side of this protein is doing, what the C-terminal side. So as you can imagine, in bacteria, everything is known. But this was not known how it works. So there was a special issue for the 2000 in Cell, and there was a review, and there's written, we are left with two topological mysteries. How does a bacterial cell know where its middle is, and what is the nature of the medical mark that the FTSZ, that is the ring, makes a constriction, and that triggers polymerization. So how to find this middle? For me, it was immediately suggestive. If you have this out-of-phase oscillation, it must be something similar as we have it there. And if this is exactly an out-of-phase oscillation we have there. So I was writing to Piet de Boer, I have there a nice simulation. We get an activation. The activation poisons itself. We get activation on the other side, and it looks quite similar. But I got a nice email back and say that's wonderful, but we don't have any inhibitory substances there. But we have another substance, and this is called MIN-E. And this other substance is in the center, and the oscillation depends on the center. But then this was a very tough time for I think nearly half a year, because the problem was to get any idea how you can have something in the center, and this is necessary that you get oscillations in the other part. It was already not clear whether it's really stable. There you see it's a little bit off center, there's a little bit off center. So it was a little bit shaky what it's doing. And to make the long story short, I will show you first the model we developed together with Piet de Boer, and then show the simulation. So see, we have there two proteins, let them just, because otherwise you are confused, let them call it green and red. What the real names are is at the top. So the idea is we have the red molecules that sit on the the green molecules make some sort of carpet all around. The red molecule binds to the green, and after binding, both drop off from the membrane. Then they separate each other, and the red goes to the next part. As we know now, there's a phosphorylation step in between, binds again, and this comes again. So the idea is, it is like a razor blade which goes over the place and shaves the thing. Or imagine you have some sort of windshield wiper which goes back and forth. And so the idea was then how to localize it, and it turns out that the activator depletion model is ideal to make a pattern within the cell. For pattern formation, I told you we need a high diffusion which of one substance and the low diffusion on the other, and an optimal way is if you have your autocatalytic reaction at the membrane, but you have precursor molecules which are diffusing in the membrane, in the cytoplasm, they can diffuse rapidly. So the idea is you get something that's localized, which goes on the expense of the molecules which goes back and forth. And the idea was then that you get a local peak. The local peak removes the green, therefore the red area is removing, is going into in direction where still the green is there, and eats up then all the greens, and then it returns and goes to the other side. And in the next simulation, you see we start from any initial situation, and after a while they get a wonderful back and forth movement, and meanwhile the GFP for min A is much better, so you can really now see. And it's also clear, let's say, if you don't have the red one, you don't get any oscillation because you remove the razor blade. Or for instance, you could also show, this was clear from genetic tricks, if you put more of the red stuff there in, the frequency gets higher because then you remove it more rapidly from this. And of course, this works also in these longer stuff. There you see this outer phase oscillation between this. There's space-time. Okay. This was the first. And now I would like to go to another problem, and that's the question, how a cell finds its direction.
Apparently, there's some new work that hasn't come out yet that says in other bacteria there aren't oscillations. In
oh, it's clear. Bacillus subtilis doesn't work like
yeah.
this. And it's much easier to write down a model in which you have two stable peaks at the side and you get something new triggered. So
they're uniform.
I think one has to look into this detail. It's clear that other bacteria, it's not universal, but what is obviously is that the other bacteria use similar mechanisms for instance to make the traffic between of little DNA rings which are then which have to be divided between the two daughter cells. So it's a frequently used system more than other systems, but Bacillus subtilis made it in different way.
Well, when I understood there was just a new result saying that often in other bacteria these proteins are uniformly distributed, and so they actually may not, in many species, play a role in some
I will not discuss other models, I just will talk a little about it, and I will now go to another problem, and that's the problem how cells detect an external gradient. You see, it's a major problem. For instance, we have slime mold cells. The slime mold cells are able to detect 1 or 2% gradient over the cell diameter. It's also clear that these slime mold cells can detect this at very different levels. So it's the absolute concentration doesn't play a role. It's a relative gradient which is important. So the question is then, how a cell could be sensitive enough that it can do. And I hope that I convinced you that again my shells tell me an interesting story for this. Yes, for instance, if you put a single dictyostelium cell under the microscope, and you look what the single cell under the microscope is doing. Then there are a group of Michael Ricker which found they are by no means random. So you see they are stretching one way, so they are rounding up, stretching in the other way, and rounding up and stretching in the same way. They make something like this, even without any signal. And other cells, they have something like that they rotate, like in the windmill fashion. So they go around. So that means a cell, even if it does not see any signal, they have an internal life on its own. And you will see that this is something very helpful for the cell. I told you that you can make a pattern, but if you have local self-enhancement and long-range inhibition, so it would be straightforward to say, oh, if you have a cell, and the cell has a pattern-forming system, and you use a little this asymmetry because we have an unstable situation, we can generate a pattern. But there's a problem. After you once generate a pattern, you are absolutely unable to reorient it, because the internal pattern is so stiff that you have no chance to change it. So therefore, the problem is not how to detect the small gradient, but the problem is how to be to remain the sensitivity, so that even after the pattern is formed, you can get rid of it. And long time ago, 1974, I proposed with Alfred Gehrer that the solution is oscillation. For instance, in Slimod, the Slimod oscillates. And therefore, if you have an oscillation, you make your peak, then the inhibitor makes an overshoot, kills everything, and you have a new freedom to make something new. It is fine, but there were strong arguments against such a model, and for the following reason. If you make this type of simulation, you see immediately there's only a small time window in each simulation where the system is sensitive. Only if you are in a very precise way, and the experiment tells you that this is not the case. The system is always, doesn't matter where you are in the oscillation, the system, the cells are always sensitive. And the other thing is, if you look to a real chemotactic cell, as you have seen it in the initial picture, you have multiple multiple fingers which are stretching out in a highly dynamic fashion. So you can say, oh, we know how to make multiple peaks, you restrict your inhibition, but if you would do it, this would be a very bad strategy, because let's say you can get an activation on one side, but you can get also an activation on the other side. Even if you have a strong asymmetry, the cell would not know where to go because they have to go to both sides at the same time, and this would be difficult. So I will show you in a series of simulations the mechanism we assume. Imagine if you would have no diffusion at all, you would get almost a needle-sharp peak. If you include in your self-enhancing reaction some sort of saturation, you get a much lower concentration, that is even not in scale, but this is much broader. If you now add to this situation some random fluctuation, blue is always the external signal, and you see, you would not see by naked eye that this is asymmetric. The assumption, usual standard assumption in my model, is that you have 2% difference between these two sides, which you cannot hardly see by the naked eye. So then, if you have this variation, then you can have multiple peaks. These are not generated by lateral inhibition, but because there the fluctuation was just in such a way that this was, even if you have this weak external difference, these points were better. And if you have no external a gradient at all, they just appear at random position. But this again would be hardly be shiftable. But now the real trick comes, and the trick is you have another process which makes a finite lifetime of this activated area. It's like in politics, you have a much better situation, let's say, if the president has only a finite only a certain number of years he can go, then you are sure, absolutely, there's a limitation, that say in the whole population can only be active if the older guys, I'm sorry, are sometimes then disappearing, so that you the whole system becomes flexible if established peaks also disappear. And there's a sense of simulation which comes out. We assume that after such a peak is formed, we have another these systems have on these peaks have only a limited lifetime. And you see, you get always this type of new signals out, and but they don't stay there very long. And even if you have this tiny external signals, you see that your system is following and adapting to the new situation. And this will never have a steady state. And I told you that we get this type of windmill behavior or this back and forth behavior. And for instance, this reminds you to the outer phase, or that this is essentially an outer phase oscillation. And we know how to do it. And I told you also that we get a little shift and we get traveling waves. And I think this is a traveling wave solution for this chemotactic cell. That means if you have no external signal, then it is the history of the what happens in the cell makes a sufficient asymmetry that you can generate some the pattern. This will never come to rest, and therefore it's so sensitive, and therefore it can always adapt to the next orientation. Okay. Now let us go to the next. It's a well-established assumption in botany. If you go to all textbooks, that a leaf has an inhibitory influence on the next leaves, and you can use our standard equation, and you get a peak, you can get one peak, and the one peak makes an inhibition, and you get another peak, which comes out on the opposite side, and you get the wonderful orientation like this. But what I never got with this type of mechanism is any helical arrangement. And the reason you can see from this type of simulation, you see there's almost, if you have a rapidly diffusing inhibitor, at the time where the next initiation has to take place, there's very little asymmetry left from this original signal. To get helical arrangement, it is that the second signal has to be exposed to the asymmetry even from the penultimate one. And that's a problem. There's no any asymmetry left. And if you go to some other simple plans, you see there's something strange in the system. Because let's say, for instance, there, you see that the spacing around this type of wall is obviously something completely different from the spacing in the other dimension. So the assumption was, let us try the same trick as we were trying before, separate the inhibition in time and separate the inhibition in space. And you see, for instance, in this type of fire cone, you see that this has some sort oblique arrangement of signals, and you see this is very much what you see in some shells. And the idea for this type of oblique lines of dots was that we have two inhibitions. One inhibition in space, which say, I'm their signal, I don't need anything in my surrounding. And we have another inhibition, it's in green, which say, I was there activated, keep this area free. So then if the next activation is coming, it's coming only in an area where both are low enough, the spatial inhibition and the inhibition with a long time constant. And then you get always the displacement in this direction. We have now good indications that the long-range inhibition is not made by an inhibition, but by a depletion, and that it's again that's a famous plant hormone. It's called auxin, which is from presumably transported away by the leaves towards the roots. And if you make this assumption, so the red would be the auxin, the green would be the inhibition. Whenever you get their signal, you have some sort of memory. My side was occupied, so the next signal, it's, now the movie starts again. So this is, it gets the label occupied, the next will become there, and even the next is coming there. And if you make this in the real simulation, you see that, and you plot your activated area for, as it's plotted frequently in botanical textbooks as concentric rings, the older one there and the younger one always more to the center, you see that you get exactly this type of golden angle which you see in the normal development. Yeah.
There's recent work by Newell and Shipman on philotactic patterns in the tips of cacti, because they're from Arizona, chili cacti. And the whole argument there has nothing to do with reaction fusion so much as it does with elasticity, the buckling of plates.
I think Paul Green was favoring buckling,
mm-hmm.
but what's clear is that immediately if you block the transport of auxin, this has nothing to do with then you don't inhibit any buckling, but immediately you stop phylotaxis. So it's at least in this way it looks like this. There is some strange observation: if you somewhere weaken the cells, then you can have an influence. At least I will not go into this fight. This is a long fight over decades, really. Whether it's closest packing, whether it's reaction diffusion, or things like this. My argument is more is the following: to get this type of helical arrangement, it is better to have two separate inhibitions and not only one. One inhibition in space and one inhibition in time. And if you look to the actual meristems, you see that also in the real meristems, the next meristem is coming surprisingly close to the previous meristems. And this tells you that that this type of long-ranging inhibition obviously doesn't last very long. So in this way, that's the only point I would make. Whether it's mechanical or whatsoever, my argument is I will not fight against this because I don't know what molecules are. But my feeling is you need some, obviously you have some lateral inhibition. If you have something there, it should not be in the next, but you get a much better fit if you say, we have two inhibitions, one is in space, one around the circumference, and one is, says this sector was occupied, wait a little bit, and then you get this type of nicely shifted.
Is the angle, angle of offset different for different plants or shells or for cones? And what would be the minimum angle of offset you could get, a maximum?
So the usual offset angle is the golden angle with 137 degree, but of course then it depends on how large your meristem is. You can have multiple peaks like this. You can almost have more than one like you have there. You have more than one line which are there, and so therefore they have more than this. There is some strange angle, the so-called Lucas angle, which has 99.5 degree, and if we make this type of simulations for different parameters, we also run in the Lucas angle, but it's not very stable, but the golden angle is very stable. You can almost make whatever you want, except you get this type of usual or one. This, of course, you get. last point, and this is pellet development. So you have the reiki in the center, and you have this branched hairs, and usually you would not think that anything very dramatic happens therein. This is just a branch structure. But if you see how such a feather is made, you will immediately see that this is interesting. Feathers are initiated by local maxima, and we have now activating and inhibiting substances which are involved, so that's very nice, this nice pattern forming system. And what happens then by the intersection between the ectoderm and the mesenchyme underneath, you get a plug coat, and this leads to outgrowth and of some sort of cone-shaped cylinder, tapering off cylinder, and this cylinder gives then rise to the feather. You have on one side you get the reiki, on the other side you cut it open that you get the leaf hairs. But the generative cells are only located there at the bottom. That means, like in the shell pattern, all what's coming out is a space-time plot. That means the tip of the feather are the oldest cells, and the lower part are the youngest cell. That means you see then immediately that the tip of a feather hair is much earlier made than the connection to the reiki. So that means that it's not like a branched tree where you get some main branch and you get side branches which grow out. It's other way around. It's like if you have a piece of paper and you would try, like a child would try a feather with feather hair, you would start with a scissor from the border and cut to the inside. So this, what you see there are traveling waves. It must be traveling waves. Traveling waves which come from the outside and go to the inside. And you see, for instance, in many feathers you have this type of stripes. It's because, let's say, in some cases, at some time, you get there pigment production, so you get something brown, and then it's becoming white. And therefore, the color pattern is more or less perpendicular, because this really depends on the time. While it's cutting off, you see immediately that you cut through many time zones to make the feather hairs. So you need then one area in which you generate a signal cut open, and you need one area where you don't where the traveling waves come to rest in order that you don't lose cut away everything. And we made this was recently published in PNAS. We made a model for this just based on this mechanism. There you see there was Matt Harris, which make their beautiful experiments. There you see that they come to each other, but they always stop there. That would be the position of the reiki. And at the opposite side, you see there that you get always a branching. And I have shown to you how traveling waves are made, and if you superimpose there some sort of parameter change around the circumference, you can arrange that in one area you remain an active zone, which means cut there always our cylinder open, therefore it will open there, and this will be then what is not cut. This will be then a feather hair, and this feather hair will come until it reaches the reiki zone, which would develop there, so where you get this oblique feather hairs, what is not staying there in between, this is also feather hairs. And we have two elements, but we don't know what is the inhibitory, what drives the stuff. And so if you would think what happens in the generative zone, you would have there a signal which say always cut open in this area. That would be this zone. They remain always in activity, because otherwise you cannot fold up the feather. And you have on the contralateral side, you have then an area where always the cells, the waves stop, not to go further to get this type of leaking. So, and this is, I think, the end of my talk. I'm even far ahead of my time, but this doesn't matter. So I hope I have convinced you that the change, the helical insertion of the leaves, the cutting of the leaf hairs into the individual hairs, the pattern formation on the seashells, chemotactic orientation of a cell, all depends on situations in which you generate a local pattern, you kill the pattern, either you shift it to the neighborhood, or you have, let's say, like in the chemotactic cells, you always try to find the best place where to go, then you have to have a new chance to find a better place, so you always optimize it, and you kill always then the pattern to have a new chance to find a better way. And I would like to mention that the basic theory was developed with Alfred Geber, as I told you earlier, and Martin Klinger made wonderful work during this type of analysis of the shell pattern.